Ladies and gentlemen, can I welcome you to the Audit Committee after the summer break? Start off with apologies, Councillor Milligan, Councillor Muirhead. Order of business.
Should be as published. As published.
Could I
follow that?
Chairman, I only just, literally this morning, well, 10 minutes ago, received the Graham Thornton paper, so I haven't been able to go through it. And I find it a pretty poor situation where I get such an important paper literally 10 minutes before the meeting. So I really needed to be guided through it by Graham Thornton. I had hoped they would have been there with the papers I received yesterday.
I wonder if you have a particularly poor postal service at Huntley Cot, but we are conscious.
No, come on, I picked them up. I went yesterday. I specially came here to pick up the papers. I studied the papers properly that were handed out, but this morning I received this very vital document. I should have had that yesterday.
The answer is the same, Peter. We are conscious that these papers have been very close to the date of the meeting. Graham Thornton are expecting to speak to them perhaps at greater length than they would normally do because of that. And the reasons for their lateness are, to some large degree, to do with the functioning of the accounting function within the council. But all of that will be explained.
Sorry, the point is that I would like to be taken through the paper because I haven't really read it.
Councillor Baxter.
Thank you, Chair. I would concur with Councillor Devine's statement. I too came in yesterday. It was a local holiday. I knew that many people would not be here, but I picked up my mail, which included the papers for the meeting, but without the follow paper. Now, I understood that when we moved to a 6-weekly cycle, that there was a commitment to have papers available to members of committees and full council a full week before any meeting. So I'm quite concerned at that.
Councillor Thompson.
Yeah, I have to agree. I mean, I managed to get the agenda paper on Thursday last week when it was issued. In fact, it might have been before that. But still, come Thursday afternoon, there wasn't a paper copy of the financial statements. There was an electronic one sent out, but because of situations around the PSN, a number of members don't have remote access anymore, so members can't necessarily access that, wouldn't necessarily have known an email would have been sent to tell them that papers would have been there. So yeah, and likewise with it being a public holiday weekend, if members hadn't come in yesterday to look for stuff, they wouldn't even have got the first paper, let alone the follow paper, which is only in boxes this morning, which was the first opportunity that the council's had to have it circulated. I think, Gary, I don't know if you maybe wanted to.
Thanks, Chair. We were keen to try and get the paper out to members as quickly as possible and for the meeting of committee to go ahead today to allow colleagues in Grant Thornton to conclude the audit and the submission of the financial statements. We received the draft report on Wednesday and dedicated time to turn it around, which meant it could only be issued on Thursday. We appreciate that. Both parties appreciate that puts members of the committee in a difficult position just having seen the papers, but as I said, Peter said, the other Gary will take you through the papers in some detail.
Sorry, Chairman, if these papers were in the hands of the administration as the officials last Wednesday, it is absolutely inexcusable that they weren't there when I, at 4 o'clock, I had a meeting here yesterday at 3 o'clock, and at 4 o'clock they were still not there, and I left the building at 4:30. Then they come at 9 o'clock this morning. And if I'd known that they were there, I would have come in earlier, so I've read it. I feel really pretty, pretty cheesed off by this treatment. It really shows total contempt to the elected representatives. Sorry.
I don't believe that's the intention, but I think Grant Thornton will cover in their report why it has been problematic to produce this document in good time. We all agree that it is not in good time. It shouldn't happen in the future. The only saving grace is it's the principal item business today, so we will have a little bit more time for Grant Thornton to explain the contents and therefore get to some sort of quality decision afterwards. May I proceed to the review of the minutes? There being no declarations of interest. I have a matter arising from the discussion at various points on new buyers and insurance, and it essentially is a recommendation that we have an extensive review of the Audit Committee and systems implications of new buyers at a future Audit Committee, indicatively on 28th October. I read the paper submitted to the special meeting of the Council on 17th June and had several discussions with councillors and with the staff of the Council, and I would ask for your support to include a discussion of new buyers at our next meeting on 28th October, and to ask for the committee's support in calling for a report providing an overview of the risk management issues, the insurance position, and the loss mitigation options which have been explored by the officers. I also appreciate the nature of this report will require the discussion to be held in private session. Councillor Thompson.
Just from listening, I think some of that is probably stuff that needs to be picked up by the full council rather than audit. I think we're talking about risk, yes, there's probably elements that we need to discuss at audit committee, but I think there's probably other elements there that really need to be through the full report to the full council, because we're getting the reports back from the IMT, liaison with the government and such like. And I think that really has to be full council for that kind of discussion. So I don't know what would be taken into a report to come to audit at this point, certainly.
Well, the idea is it's not instead of the Council's deliberations, but in addition to, and this forum, with a number of the members having financial background, would be quite a good forensic forum in which to explore the wide-ranging issues of loss mitigation, impact on the Council's balance sheet, impact on the housing revenue account, and any unforeseen consequences for the electors and the taxpayers of Midlothian. And I think that would be a different quality of debate from the one that the Council would have.
Sorry, Chair, it would be the same members. All members are in the full Council, so all members would be taking part in those discussions. And obviously there will be a number of reports around the housing revenue account, the implications, what we do next, that would have to, really do have to come through the full council. And to me, it would be for the full council to task any further investigations to audit rather than audit requesting it first off. I don't know if anyone else has views on that, though.
Councillor Drink.
Well, I understand exactly where the leader comes from, and I have great empathy with it, but the implications of new buyer on our finances are such that I think it wouldn't be amiss if this audit committee really evaluated all its implications.
Yeah. I mean, it is important that the council has an overview of the position of new buyers. It is important that the council does have an overview of the position at new buyers, and the intention is to bring a report forward to the council in early course, and certainly in advance of the next meeting of the audit committee. Now, the leader is right to say that the council could then task the audit committee with looking at particular details of that. However, the audit committee can also itself, because of its concerns specifically relating to finance risk or other functions, agree that there will be a report forthcoming to the audit committee. And these reports would have quite a lot in common, but I would suggest different emphases as well. So the two approaches are not mutually exclusive. I think from an officer perspective, it is entirely appropriate that the initial report should be the one to council. And the following report, whether called for by this committee or whether requested by the council, should should follow that.
I think that crystallises the complementarity of the approaches, and I hope we can proceed on that basis so that we can unearth all the possible approaches and make the Council's position as solid as it can be before there is external review, as I'm sure there will be, of the whole new bar situation. Are there other matters arising from the minutes? The internal audit paper has, I think, three outstanding topics which are presumably still under review. We haven't lost sight of those.
Yes, they are recorded in the Covalent system, which are they're updated as progress is made with those, and that's monitored, and we do regular reviews of the recommendations every 6 months, so that will be picked up.
Are we content with the minutes? Can I therefore ask Gary Devlin to introduce the Grant Thornton draft report on the audit work?
Thank you, Chair. I guess it's quite right to start with an apology to members for the lateness of the report. Yes. The audit, you will see as I talk through the audit, and I will talk through this report in some detail because members have received it late, so it will give you a chance to really understand what it is we're saying and to ask questions around that. But it would be fair to say that towards the end of the audit, we have had a number of outstanding issues that it's taken us some time to reconcile, and we felt it was the right thing to do to be a bit sure about the position before we were able to issue members with a position statement on the accounts, and that's the position that we've reached. You'll see from the executive summary, which is on page 5 of our report, we are still waiting to finalise some matters on the accounts, and we have a bullet point list there. We don't anticipate that these matters will impact on the overall findings, but we are waiting some issues in context, it's fair to say, are still ongoing in the audit process, and we're taking some time just to work through those with the finance team. As I've said, we expect those to be not to raise any further issues on the audit, but that's the context for the report. In that context, we anticipate providing an unqualified opinion on the financial statements, and that's, of course, subject to the issues that are outstanding. You'll see from the report, and I'll talk through them in some detail, that there are a number of key issues arising from the audit. And the first, the kind of major change relates to a change to the asset valuation for housing stock, which is triggered by a change in the code, so the accounting requirements for valuing stock to fair value, and that's required an adjustment of £74.5 million reduction to the housing stock carrying value. That's a large number, but it doesn't actually impact on it. It's a technical accounting matter, in fact, and it's not a significant cause for concern to us as external auditors, because when you're valuing significant amounts of housing stock, small changes to the valuation methodology can have large changes to the number.
What's the impact on the balance
sheet? It impacts on the balance sheet and the fixed assets number in the balance sheet, but you'll see that none of the changes that are emerging from the audit process impact on the general fund of the Council. So we are not changing your cash number in relation to the reserves that the Council hold. And that's critical. So what we are talking about when I work through this are around technical accounting changes to the accounts. Nevertheless, important, but they're not impacting on the level of reserves that the Council carry. And we've identified 5 further adjustments, and so I'll just talk you through those kind of key audit findings. Now, they start on page 9 of our report, audit findings against significant risks. And what this section of the report does, audit findings against significant risks, starts on page 9 of our report.
And what is on page 8?
So page 8 is it's an introduction, really. Okay. So I don't intend to work through that again. What this section does is it tells you the risk that we identified at the planning stage, the work that we have done, and the findings against that work. So the first area is around improper revenue recognition, and we did not find any issues in relation to that risk. The second risk is a management override of controls. This is a fraud risk, so has our testing identified any frauds within the council as a result of our direct testing on the financial statements? And we did not find any fraud risks. Turning over the page, operating expenses. So we went and tested a significant amount of operating expenses through our audit, and we did not identify any errors or omissions through that audit testing. Employee remuneration, payroll. We undertook a range of testing in relation to payroll. One of the areas that we found it was calculated correctly, but we did, when we tried to test the existence of employees, we found that from our sample of 25, we were unable to verify 7 of those individuals back to individual contracts. That caused us to change our audit approach because we weren't able to gain the assurance required that those employees existed. So we then circulated the heads of department and asked for formal confirmation from heads of department that those employees existed, they were paid at the rate that was within payroll, and they were undertaking the role that was in the payroll system.
Are we allowed to ask you questions?
I'll stop at any point, and you're welcome to ask me questions.
Councillor
Dunne, can we? I'm going back to the operating expenses and creditors understated or not reported. I understand that we have still got, I know it's not creditors, debtors, but we have still got a very important issue of something that reaches a very, very substantial sum, where we still have money outstanding, not just from our customers, i.e. the people that vote for us, but also from our own staff. And did that not come out?
Chris, do you want to answer that?
That's very much a to-date. So to-date we haven't found anything in operating expenses, but we're still conducting work on the matching, so the matching of those creditor balances. So I guess the first thing to say is really this is a draft report until we get the revised financial statements and until we finish all our audit testing. So some of our audit testing hasn't been.
I think Councillor Devink's question is about debtors.
Yeah, it is about debtors, but that's still outstanding as well. So we haven't done all the matching yet on that to be able to conclude on that, but that will go into.
Anticipating the Councillor, when you do that, will you be able to distill a separate number for the amount due to the Council by its own staff that is out of time?
Can I just make a couple of points on that? I think this is important. That analysis of debtors, and you're quite right to highlight that, doesn't affect the accounts in the sense that they're still debtors. So the accounting for debtors is the accounting for debtors. And one of the things we're doing here is saying, do the accounts present a true and fair view of the financial position of the council? What you're asking is a separate issue, important but separate, which is around the systems and controls in place for managing debtors. And one of the subsets of that is employee debtors with the council. This report is the first report of two. The second report we will be bringing is an overview report of the whole council. And I would expect in that report, subject to what we find in our testing, and we've not completed it yet, as Grace has said, we may wish to raise issues of substance in relation to debtor management controls. As I say, this report is about the accounts, rather than about those control issues.
I totally understand it, but it would be helpful when time comes to look at this, because I always thought if somebody has been a debtor for more than a year, it turns into something that I used to know as bad debt, and then it does have an implication.
So we will be reporting back to the council in due course. I think I got into employee remuneration. So if we turn over the page in relation to welfare expenditure, so this is housing benefits. So we've undertaken a range of...
Sorry to interrupt there. I'd just like to go back to employee remuneration because I was frantically looking for action plan recommendations 2 and 3, because 28% of a very small sample, not to be able to find any evidence of a signed contract or acceptance of position letter, albeit that they were verified subsequently, is still very worrying and points to a lax administration system, at the very least, as I say, I can't find recommendation 2 and 3. I'm hoping very right, I have it here. Hopefully you'll be able to reassure me that controls will be put in place to make sure that if you came back and took another random sample once this has been implemented, that you should find none at all.
It's not for me to provide you with that assurance, it's for management to provide you with that assurance. Mm-hmm. What I would say is this is not the first time we've identified weaknesses in controls in this particular area, and internal audit also have. But I do know, because we have discussed this with management, that management are also aware of that issue and are taking action, but it's for management to provide that assurance.
We've also had internal audit look in this area, I think, in the past.
Yeah, just about to start another audit of payroll, so we'll be reporting back once we've got the outcome of that.
In terms of the specific sample, my understanding is the cases that were, where that evidence couldn't be collected were files that were, or payroll records that were held in satellite operations. As members will know, through the management restructure, we are in the process of consolidating into one integrated service. And the controls and the use of document management through that service will tighten our internal control arrangements, and I would very much hope that whilst you can't, there will always be the risk of human error, but I would think the controls in place will be much stronger and would avoid that level of testing failure.
So moving on to welfare expenditure, our initial sampling of the housing benefit system identified 9 errors to date, 2 related to a system parameter error, so how the system was set up. So there's no point in testing further in relation to that, but that error will be extrapolated, and I'll just talk about where that gets to in a second. Of the remaining 7 errors, 6 resulted in additional testing, and so we've had to test over 240 cases because that's the requirement of the audit process in relation to testing for benefits. All of those errors will be extrapolated, and I guess we don't know where that will lead to, but there is a risk in relation to the outstanding number that could impact on housing benefits due to the council. As I say, we don't know where that will end up because we haven't completed that work. It wouldn't be material to the financial statements, but it may have an impact on the housing benefit grant claim.
May I just ask, HB count, what does it be?
It's a testing methodology for housing benefits.
It's again turning to the action plan. It says recommendation 13, but there isn't one.
Yes, we will update that. So then in relation to the housing revenue account, our work didn't identify any adjustments in relation to the housing revenue account other than we mentioned the housing stock adjustment in relation to capital. But we will be monitoring the impact of New Byers Crescent and the resilience of that account, and this is really flagging up as a hook to the next report that I mentioned earlier. We did agree that 5 houses in New Byers Crescent had been impaired as a result of known issues at the year-end date in relation to that particular situation, and the Council has agreed to make additional disclosures on the accounts in the likely position, so this is a post-balance sheet event disclosure, and that will come through. So then looking to judgments and estimates. So there's a change. This is quite a technical issue, but page 29 of the account sets out the authority's approach to the rolling programme of revaluations. And the council has, along with many other councils, adopted a 5-year rolling programme, and that's been perfectly fine. However, there has been a change in the code which requires all classes of assets within an individual class to be valued at the same time, so you don't get a variation in time between the valuation of a class of asset. And what we're recommending is that the council has another look at its valuation methodology going forward, and you'll see that feeds into the action plan. So this is quite a technical area, but the code has changed, and that should lead to a change in valuation methodology. We reviewed accounting policies, and again, in relation to changes in the code, sorry, I've lost my place a little bit in relation to accounting policies. I think we're at there. It's because this trips. Yes. So, So it's not highlighted any issues, and minor additional disclosures were made as part of the audit, and we cover those through the audit process. And then into adjusted misstatements, which is on page 14. So you see the 74.5 million in relation to the value of houses being brought into use as a result of a change in the code. So that's on page 14. And we talk that through. So page 15. The valuation of New Battle High School. So we noted that New Battle High School had been subject to accelerated depreciation because the school was going to be demolished. The school was then revalued and given a 12.865 million revaluation and reassigned a five-year life. Now, that just didn't really make sense to us during the audit process, so we asked for that to be reviewed, and that has resulted in a... So if you're going to demolish an asset, it shouldn't really have a high carrying value, we wouldn't think. And that has resulted in a change to the accounts.
I would say that... The process issue is how we got to that ludicrous situation. Councillor Devink.
Yeah, I am just still... Maybe I'm just financially inept, but, you know, when you are facing a change of 75 or 74 million, that doesn't make any impact has me flummoxed. Maybe I need to go back to school.
This is public sector accounting. If you were in a commercial operation, that would be a significant matter. But the reason really, without going into technical detail, the council does not hold its assets for the purposes of generating profit. It holds its asset for delivering services. And therefore, you value the assets for their service potential, not for their ability to generate an investment return. And that's what leads to this outcome. It's a philosophical difference.
Can I attempt to explain it? When we build council houses, there's obviously the value of the land, the cost of construction, like the building of any house. And it's work in progress at that stage, and it's valued at cost in very conventional accounting terms. But when we sign the leases, because it's a social house, there has to be a social discount. At that point, on my reckoning, there's probably about 1,000 houses involved here, which have cost, including the land, perhaps 100,000 to 125,000 each. And what we're doing here is saying, well, knock off 75,000-ish a house to reflect the signing of the lease and the social purpose of the house. And that's why this number exists.
You explained that better than I did, Peter. Thank you. In relation to the, just to go back to the valuation of New Battle High School, we are raising in our action plan a recommendation around how valuations are undertaken going forward. And that recommendation has been accepted, and that should prevent that type of outcome in future. And in relation to item three, double counting of PPP assets, we identified that land associated with schools in one of the council's PPP schemes was carried at single asset in the asset register, but land values were also included separately, and that led to double counting. So we have requested an adjustment for that. It would be a double counted, so it would be negative, it would be a reduction in assets. In relation to number four, Morriswood capital receipt, we identified that the council had not fully accounted for the deferred element of that capital receipt. So they had brought it into account in relation to fixed assets, but they hadn't accounted for the gain or loss on the asset disposal, and that required, so only half of the accounting had been done, and we processed the remainder of the accounting through the accounts. Number five, the valuation of Lothian buses. So that was treated as a prior period adjustment in the draft financial statements, but in our view, this was a change in estimation technique rather than a prior period adjustment. So we had that altered to reflect that view.
May I just, again, before, just to go back to Morriswood, I still don't understand that. That money was due to the council from Taylor Woodrow, wasn't that?
Yes, so it's still due to the council. Nothing changes the accounting. The part of the accounting of the amount due to the council isn't altered. What's altered is the accounting for the gain or loss on the disposal of an asset in the income and expenditure statement. So that's what this change reflects.
But I thought it's still that Taylor Woodrow owed us money to us.
Yes.
So can we not pressurise them to make that money available?
the money due to them, you're absolutely right, they're still due it, and it's in accordance with the sale. Will be a set period of time when they are due to pay us. The accounting rules require us to account for the disposal of that asset at the point where the land changes hands. Then the accounting rules, which you're absolutely right, Peter, are extremely complicated, require us to account for the difference between the amount that was carried on the balance sheet and the amount of physical cash we're going to receive through the consolidated income and expenditure account. So there's a whole raft of accounting entries that are generated from that sale, which have to be laid out in a very specific, defined way, and we didn't get that quite right. But it doesn't change the value of the land and the amount of money we're going to get.
So turning over the page to page 17, this section of the report records adjusted misstatements within the account. Some of these are very technical in nature. One is accounting for financial instruments and the methodology for the carrying value for borrowings for lender option borrowing options needed to be changed, and so we've made a slight change for that. It's very technical, and as I say, none of these adjustments affects your reserves position. On page 18, we then record a number of misclassifications and disclosure changes we identified through the accounts. Now, I can talk through each of these. I don't know how members want me to deal with this. Admittedly, it's a late report, but so we've made adjustments to the capital adjustment account. So there are a number of these adjustments that have gone through that affect the reserves of the council, but not the general fund reserves. So they affect the technical capital reserves. The misstatement of 9.1 million in relation to the HRA income and expenditure is an impairment presentational error. The cash flow statement is impacted by the Morriswood change that we discussed earlier. There's a change in relation to Shawfair around the classification of assets to assets held for sale. The impact of New Barrows Crescent has been adjusted to reflect a post-balance sheet event. There's adjustments to accounting policies, a small number of inconsistencies in relation to the treatment of accounts, for example, revenue recognition policies for council tax and non-domestic rates. Additional disclosure for the loading buses adjustment. Additional disclosure for the PPE valuation programme. The financial instruments issue we discussed in Lobos has been changed for disclosure. Pension disclosures in relation to comparatives in the cash flow statement have been changed. Council tax income account, the impact of council tax reduction scheme in line with the requirements of the code was required to be changed.
How much was involved with that?
So, yeah. Number 11. It's disclosure only.
Yeah,
it doesn't affect the financial statements. Again, in loss and disposal of current assets, which we mentioned earlier. And then there is, over the pages, so that's those are the adjusted misstatements and the adjusted disclosure requirements.
If you go back to number two, the nine million, I assume that is.
Yeah.
Could you just run through that again, please?
So this is the impairment of new buyers where they impaired the six. Oh, it's not. Oh, well, okay.
Within the housing revenue income and expenditure account, there is a line for impairment of assets of 9.1 million. But actually, and it has been explained to me, it's basically a typo that was put in the wrong place. So,
So
the actual impairment there is around about 90,000 rather than about 9 million. So that was just an error. It wasn't reflected in the note 10 to the actual financial statements. So we just highlighted that. And there was a corresponding entry to make the capital adjustment account as well. So we've cleared that out as well.
If you put in, then it's taken off?
Yep. Yes. It's by mistake. It was just a mistake.
Didn't that actually impact on the bottom line?
Not the council accounts, no.
It's a fat finger error. So if someone, instead of putting in 19,000, has put in
9,000.
Yeah.
Yes. The problem I have with that is that whoever was involved in the error seems to have gone on and made further entries and would lead to a position where the accounts as a whole do not cast in a comprehensive way.
So we mentioned at the start of this presentation that there were some items which of the audit that were still outstanding. One of those items is reconciliation of the reserves position in the accounts, and that features. So one of the issues that, and it's a tidy up issue if I'm honest, but it's really around making sure that the final statement of movement and reserves now agrees fully to all of the adjustments that we've talked through today. And that's taking the finance team just a little bit of time to work through all of that.
But is an error of this magnitude found in other local authority accounts? This strikes me as quite remarkably large for someone not to check the caption and look at the underlying working papers.
So my insight, firstly, yes. So there are a larger number of, I think, audit findings this year than in previous years.
For Midlothian.
For Midlothian. But I would say I think part of the area, the circumstances that Midlothian or the context is around the finance team that have been dealing with other issues, for example, New Barnes Crescent. And as a result of some of those stresses and strains within the finance team, the supervisory check process that would normally exist in the accounts of Midlothian has not functioned as well this year as it has done in previous years. And I think what members are seeing is a reflection of that. And I think rather than focus on some of these numbers, I agree, look large, I think they're largely technical in nature and they're largely solved by having a supervisory check within finance of the accounts in a more timely fashion before they get to audit. And then I suspect you would be seeing significantly less of this type of report from external audit. So that would have picked up, for example, the typo that we just discussed.
It's just that our budget deficit was around 9 million. It just seems coincidentally to me.
Chair, I think I would want to reinforce the entries that Gary and Grace have talked us through this morning are extremely technical accounting entries required by the code. A colleague in another council described them as hokey-cokey entries. They're put in one line in the account, so when we look at that 9.199 million, it goes in as an impairment, and then it's reversed out through an adjustment to a capital account, a capital adjustment account. And if my memory serves me right, sorry, it doesn't, so if you just bear with me, the balance on the capital adjustment account in the account, so if I can just take a second to get the right page, is... At the year-end, unusable reserves were £342 million. That £342 million is a figure that doesn't exist. The money doesn't sit in a bank account anywhere at all. It's money you can never spend and never touch and never see. The point I would stress throughout the audit of the accounts and throughout the work we've done is that the usable reserves, particularly general fund and housing revenue account, have not changed and will not change based on the work that's been done to date. So the money that's there to build houses, invest in the houses, employ staff, deliver services has not changed as a result of the audit. And that's where the finance team's focus has been in terms of financial discipline, helping support the underspend that we achieved last year and helping deliver the transformation programme which will support future years for financial sustainability. I take on board all of the points Gary's made about the technical accounting adjustments. CIPFA, the Chartered Institute of Public Finance and Accountancy, are doing a consultation at the moment on local authority accounts. And myself and a number of other practitioners feel that the accounts themselves have got to the stage that are so complicated and so many hokey-cokey type entries in them that they become extremely challenging for people who are experts in their field in finance that find it extremely challenging to understand what the information is telling them. And I think we've seen a bit of that this morning in terms of the entries. But I would reiterate that although the figures look big, the impact on the amount of resource that you have to deliver services into the future has not changed.
I accept what you say, but it's still very worrying that in the housing revenue account, which is generally expected to balance, somebody somehow thought there was a 9 million impairment which didn't exist, if I understand the explanation correctly.
Yes. So, I think the finance team recognise that, they have to do better in terms of the final accounts, and you'll see through the recommendations that we are going to work again with the finance team together to make sure that we can put systems and processes in place that prevent a similar outcome going forward. My own insight into this is that some of these issues that are coming through should be easily resolved by having the right control in place at the financial statements end. I'm not yet at this point saying that this represents a loss of financial control. As Gary quite rightly points out, the general fund has not changed, the housing revenue account monies has not changed. Page 20, which is, these are the unadjusted misstatements. So these are the errors the audit identified that will not be processed through the accounts. Members have to be comfortable, it's your accounts, not the auditor's accounts. So members have to be comfortable that these unadjusted misstatements are not processed. So we identified that none of the additions to PPE had been revalued when they were transferred from assets under construction. That's the requirement within the code, is to revalue at that point, and we have a number in there for that. It's 403,000, so it's not a material amount. The revaluation of HRE assets did not include one site, Kuykin, I think that said, and that would have impacted on a downward revaluation of about £1 million. Again, not material to the overall balance sheet of the council. And number three, we noted the historical practice to charge a full year's depreciation on revalued assets had the effect of understating property, plant and equipment balances. It's not material on an annual basis, so the annual depreciation number in the accounts. But nevertheless, the overall impact of those adjustments, if they were all processed, would be £2 million, which in our view as external auditors, that's not material to the financial position of the council, but the accounts belong to the council, not to the auditor.
Surely it's illogical if you go to the trouble and expense of a revaluation exercise in a given year to then start depreciating that year when you've just taken a real-time fair value look at the asset.
Yes.
Is there a substantial agreement between the officers and yourselves about all these changes?
Yes, so these are agreed changes in the accounts. This is an agreed position. As at the date of the report in relation to the audit findings and the adjusted and unadjusted differences.
So in terms of this committee, this is for noting rather than for us to exercise a judgment?
No. So particularly in relation to the unadjusted misstatements, the committee has to feel comfortable that those unadjusted misstatements are not adjusted. The view that I'm giving to you as a committee is that they are not material to the accounts. But it's not my decision to make. It's for the council to make that decision.
Yep, okay. And which body within the council will make that decision?
Well, I think it's for the audit committee to recommend to full council that they approve the accounts.
In which case, we need to consciously endorse the approach you're taking here.
Yes.
Have we any comments? In which case I think we are in agreement with the approach you're taking.
Thank you. So moving on then to internal controls. As you can imagine, as part of doing the financial statements audit, we also come across some control weaknesses through the process of simply doing the audit. Some we've mentioned before. So one relates to control weaknesses in relation to employee remuneration and particularly the audit trail back to contracts. We've noted three recommendations. So all employees should have signed evidence of their current contract on an HR file. There should be controls in place to prevent posting of unbalanced journals. So we identified an ability for an HR to post to a code which wasn't featured in the trial balance for the council. And they should review payroll records to ensure that individuals only have one bank account and employee reference. We were noting duplicates through the audit process.
I understand what Gary said about different payroll records all over the council and you're now going to centralise them. But I don't understand how you can post a code which does not appear in the trial balance and result in unbalanced journal entries. Sure, that would be just rejected, would it not?
There's a compensating control in terms that it's flagged in finance, so as soon as it happens and they've posted something, then it is flagged. I understand these only relate to statutory maternity payments. So there are only a few during the year. So we've kind of looked at how many times it happened, and it was only around about seven or eight times it actually happened during the year. but in an ideal world, the system wouldn't let them be able to do that. So I guess that when we get to the action plan, that's what the council have agreed to look at to make sure that doesn't happen.
Chair, Councillor O'Brien's correct. When it hits the general ledger, it is kicked out, and as Grace says, there is compensate controls. And I think, you know, we've got 4,000 employees who get paid at least 12 times a year. So there's thousands and thousands of ledger transactions in respect to those employees. And I think what Grace highlighted around SNP, there were 7 or 8 that were picked up during testing of those thousands and thousands that had a rejected code. And we'll obviously resolve that at source in the payroll system so it doesn't happen again.
So moving on then to the next internal control weakness. We identified 2 control weaknesses relating to the general ledger. One is we're still on page 21. Yes. So the finance team identified additional revenue from housing benefit overpayment recoveries that had not been included in the ledger during the year. So that you'll see that did impact in reserves by about £1 million at the year end. Journal entries are not always used sequentially, presenting a risk that not all journals are monitored or controlled. Now the reason we raised that, we identified at the beginning the audit team does scenario planning for if there were to be fraud in this council, how would they perpetrate that fraud? How would it be detected and reported and acted upon? And we do that within the audit team. And one of the key areas that fraud could be perpetrated is around journal entries. So you'll see that for us, and we've never seen a fraud in journal entries, but we are aware of that risk. Hence, you'll get that reported every time from an auditor. So those are the two control weaknesses we identified in relation to the general ledger. So then moving on to page 22, we're coming towards the end of this report now, you'll be glad to know. So this simply confirms that in accordance with auditing standards, there is a duty on the auditor to report matters to those charged with governance, that's this committee. And this talks you through from item 1 to 6, how we have reported on those matters. Matters in relation to fraud, laws and regulations, written representations, disclosures, related parties and going concern. And then moving on to section 3, which covers fees and independence. We simply note that we have charged the fee that we outlined and agreed with you in the audit plan. And very importantly, to simply confirm that we've not undertaken any non-audit work for the council. Our fees are paid by Audit Scotland. And we have, and to confirm to you that we have acted independently and objectively throughout the audit process. And then finally, in the final table at the back of the report, there is a summary of how we have discharged all of our duties in relation to auditing standards. And it shows where we have done that in the reporting framework, so in the table at the back. Appendix B outlines an audit opinion that we, at this point, plan to provide, which is the unqualified opinion. And I'm happy to take any further questions from members.
Councillor Devine.
There's nothing else.
Okay. Sorry.
It's just to be, what we want to be really clear to the council that we
are independent. No, good. I'm all for it.
So, warts and all, an unqualified report. How will Audit Scotland react to this document? They presumably will see it.
You'd have to ask Audit Scotland that. My own insight to this is that Audit Scotland are looking at 2 or 3 things really in relation to Midlothian Council. One is how the council is responding to New Byres Crescent in relation to the impact that may have on the financial position of the council going forward. They will be looking in the round as they look at all councils around the financial position of the council and how it is reacting and responding to the financial challenges that it faces. And the other area that Audit Scotland are always interested in is around how governance works within any council. And as I say, the next report that we bring to this council, our annual report on the audit, will cover both performance and governance and the financial position of the council. This report has been very much around the technical audit of the financial statements. It's not been around those wider, much more important issues for how the council manages its position. And the Controller of Audit and Audit Scotland will be more interested in that paper, that report, and what we say in that report than necessarily in this technical report.
Thank you,
the report comes, it's a draft report. When the other report comes in, do you check it, or does it come back to the audit committee, or what happens?
It's a report to full council, but I think in the past it's always come to audit committee. It's due to be reported in October, and I think the earliest meeting that it can come to is the November meeting. I think is that right?
So the report will be substantially in this form, but you've mentioned to us there's further work to be done to finalise it.
Yes, it's a draft report, until we... you wouldn't expect auditors to pin their colours to the mast whilst there's still some work outstanding to finalise the accounts. What I'm saying at this meeting is we don't anticipate that those final matters will result in any further material findings in relation to the audit, because the audit at this point is substantially complete.
Councillor Thompson.
I suppose it's a request, given the importance of the next report, that we do get it much more in advance and that it's sent to the Council on time to get it to the members in ample time.
Agreed. There being no further questions, thank you all very much for coming. I look forward to seeing you in October.